You've tuned to the Turley Frequency, starring your host, Kevin Turley, with guest stars Mike Romano and Reed Hodges, and special guest stars, the members of the FCC, whom we respect respectfully. Now, time to get tuned into the frequency. Call the show at 888-928-0881. That's 888-928-0881. Or text us at 251-928-2111. And now we cross live to the Archangel Radio Studios in downtown Fairhope to at last feel the Turley Frequency.
Hello again, it's me, Kevin Turley, joining you today on the show. We check in with talk radio legend Mike Church, who will give us his take on the presidential races in both the Republican and the Democrat parties. Mike joins us on a simulcast with the Crusade Channel in the very next segment. Top of the hour, we pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and you are very much invited to join me. Feel free to text us here your prayer requests on 251-928-2111, and the lines are open for you right now. In the final segment, we meet Dan Donaldson. Who's he? Well, he's the Vice President of the Catholic Men's Leadership Alliance, and he will be telling us all about the forthcoming Heroic Men Summit, which aims to transform men into powerhouses of virtue and discipleship. Yes, stick around till the last segment to find out more about all that good stuff. Well, with all that good stuff, let's get this show on the road. Yes, welcome back to the Turley Frequency. So good to be back here with you after my enforced absence for the last 2 weeks. I think I'm allowed to say I was on jury service, but I'm not allowed to say much more than that, I'm afraid. It's one of those civic duties we've all got to do, and I had to do it. I tried to tell them the Turley Frequency needed me. They said that was not a valid excuse. In fact, it wasn't an excuse at all. They were going to give me an extra 2 weeks, but I pleaded with them and got off after 2 weeks. So anyway, good to be back with you. Now, as always on a Monday morning, my eyes kind of veer towards news items that are to do with work. If you're listening to this, it's 8 a.m. Central Time, 9 a.m. Eastern Time. You're either on your way to work, you're maybe at work, you've maybe started work if you're at home, you've dropped the kids off at school or whatever you're doing. You're in that Monday morning situation. And I haven't met very many people who jump out of bed on a Monday morning, punch the air and say, great. I've met a lot of people who on Sunday evenings are sort of crying or dreading a Monday morning for whatever reason. Their boss, the work, the commute, the tension, the pressure, whatever it is on a Monday morning in the workplace. So work is something which really does have an impact on us in terms of our emotions, especially at the start of a week. So as always, there are a number of stories around which I thought were very illustrative of where we're up to. I do think, and we've talked about this on this show a number of times, that we're in some sort of transition period when it comes to work. The workplace is changing. The nature of work is changing. The type of work that we've been doing for years and years and years is changing. The threat of AI, all work can be done, or a lot of it can be done by AI. For example, this radio show could be done by an AI bot, something you might feel strongly about and may wish to contact the station manager about. But an awful lot of jobs that we thought were human and could only be done by our human beings may not be the case. So there's been a recent survey done this side of the Atlantic, and it was done with 18 to 24 year olds. Don't ask me what generation that is. I've lost count. Is that whatever generation they are. They're young people, right? They're young people who are getting into the workplace. They're young people who are either in education, about to come out into the workplace, or they are young people who have decided not to go down the education route and go straight into the workplace. Well, a recent survey for a paper over here in Britain, it said that 52% of these young adults aged 18 to 24 are concerned that artificial intelligence systems will damage their employment prospects. 52% of young people. They are digital natives. We've talked about that. They are people who've grown up with the internet, feel very comfortable with all of that sort of thing. And 52% of them, that's the majority, feel that AI will impact negatively on their future job prospects. Now, how does that compare with the rest of the population? Well, in the same survey, the rest of the population, that's oldies like me, 39%. Only 39% thought that AI would impact. And I suggest that that's probably because we have a lot less time in the labor market. We're not going to be around the employment market that much longer in some cases. So 39% are probably saying, yes, it probably will damage my long-term prospects. But hey, I don't have any long-term prospects. I'm that old. Now, nearly half of the people that were surveyed, they also said that advanced AI may one day start to act against human interests. Again, this is something we've talked about on this show quite a lot. And these findings come as the British Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, is preparing to fly to Washington to meet with your President Biden to back a new system of regulation to protect against AI threats to security and livelihood. So I don't think that these fears of these young people are sort of overblown, out of proportion. If a British Prime Minister and an American President are meeting to try and put some safeguards into place, then there is obviously some sort of threat. But back in the workplace, back in those who are employed and less so AI, did you know there's something called Bare Minimum Monday? Bare Minimum Monday, yeah. And it is, as it says on the tin, Bare Minimum Monday is that there is now an acceptance or a realization that employees need a transition into the working week from the weekend. Right? So in my day, the transition was you went to bed early on a Sunday, you got up on Monday morning, you went to your work and you got on with it. Today, there is a different mentality abroad. And that is that somehow employees have to be kind of gently managed into the workplace and back into their work. I don't know how this works on talk shows, but in the workplace, in the other real world of the workplace, such things as not scheduling meetings for people. I don't know what they're going to be doing all day. They're going to be answering emails, maybe just catching up on each other's weekend, slowly getting into the mood. There's also things about telling them to wear, for example, cozy outfits. I don't know what a cozy outfit is, but I guess it's this idea that somehow the stress of having to dress for the office is proving too much for some. But it goes on. It talks about not using overhead lights, using sort of low lamps and soft lighting to enable people to get back into work. Anyway, I won't bore you with all the various things, because you can imagine that Bare Minimum Monday, I think, is a recipe for Bare Minimum Weeks. If you can't cope with the challenge of getting into your workplace on a Monday, I suspect you're not particularly well suited to cope for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or even Friday. Bare Minimum Monday strikes me as one of those kind of corporate white flags, surrenders to the prevalent culture, which actually says we want more for less. And that, I contend, is not the Christian approach to work. It's not even a normal approach to work. I would say it's also a very unhealthy psychological approach to one's work, which takes up most of our days, okay? If you're only giving the bare minimum at work, I suggest you're probably only giving the bare minimum in life. Now, I was reading that article and I quickly switched away from it, thinking, well, this may catch on in Silicon Valley in California, but in the real world, surely not. But have you heard of something called universal basic income? You must have heard of it because it's been talked about in the States as well. Now, this universal basic income is the very sort of a socialist idea of giving everybody an income, regardless of what you do. So there would be a basic income for everybody in the state, paid for by the state, and that would be your universal basic income. Now, I think you can earn more than that if you choose to, but basically everybody's given a certain amount of money. Now, it sounded like something out of Das Kapital, something Karl Marx and his friend Engels, Frederick Engels, would have come up with many, many decades ago, something that may have been tried in communist Russia or China or somewhere like that, and obviously never worked. Well, guess what? Headline this morning, British news. The universal basic income is about to be trialled here in England. I know, I couldn't believe it. Now, I have to preface this that it's not the government who are trying this. This is a think tank, whatever that is. A think tank is one of those bodies that comes up with ideas and then tests them out and then tries to get governments to adopt them. And they are starting this trial in two parts of the country, in the far north of England and here in North London. And they are proposing to give everybody on the trial £1,600 per month, which works out roughly at $2,000 per month. For doing nothing. Now, I don't know about you, but am I missing something here? I mean, if you give me $2,000 a month to just be, I don't think I'd have much more incentive to do much more. Of course, I might do bits and bobs. I might earn a little bit here and a bit there. But $2,000 per month is enough to sort of scrape a living for doing absolutely nothing. And the problem is that there is something drastically missing in the bare minimum Mondays and the universal basic incomes that are being suggested. And that is they're forgetting what human nature is like. We are naturally lazy. I don't know about you, but I am naturally lazy, right? We are naturally given to enjoying ourselves, to having free time, to doing the things that we like. They're the things that we have no problem with. The things that we struggle with, the things that really take effort, are doing the things that we don't like, which are taking our responsibilities seriously, being a grown-up, an adult, working hard, providing for our families, dealing with difficult situations, be they work or home or whatever. These are the things that make us better people. Now, it's not a great leap from a bare minimum Monday to a zero minimum Monday where you get $2,000 handed to you per month and told it's good, you're okay as you are. Now, the workplace, as I've often said, can be and is something which is divine in the sense that we've got to remember that the first worker was Adam. And Adam's work did not start after the fall. Go back and read your Bibles. Adam was working in the garden before the fall, before the apples started falling. Which tells me what? It tells me that work is part of God's plan. Adam's plan, or God's plan for Adam, was that he would be a steward of the creation that God had put him in charge of. So can you see that all these things which are saying don't work or work as little as possible or don't invest in your work because it's obviously not that important. Can you see that these things are not the Christian approach to work? I'll tell you what else is not the Christian approach to work. Another headline I came across, which absolutely struck me dumb, which is saying something. And it goes like this. Indian official suspended after he drains reservoir to retrieve phone he dropped while making a selfie. I kid you not. This is a true story, right? There was a worker in India, a man who had some sort of job, and he worked at the local reservoir, and he was some sort of official. And he dropped his phone into the reservoir while he was taking a selfie. And he sent divers down into the reservoir to try and find his phone. And they couldn't retrieve it. So what did he do? Well, he did what anybody else would do. He drained the whole reservoir. 2 million liters of water. So he could get his phone back. Right? And he even filmed himself standing there watching. Well, somebody else must have filmed him because he didn't have his mobile. Somebody filmed him while he was draining 2 million litres of water. Now, just to let you know that the part of India that this reservoir is in is somewhere that really needs water. I know. It's absolutely mind-shattering that somebody could do this, that somebody could be so unaware of the consequences. Well, whenever his employers found out what he was doing, they promptly suspended him from the job. But here's the other thing. They did actually find his phone in the reservoir. After they'd drained the whole thing, they found it. And guess what? It didn't work. It didn't work. He couldn't switch it on. So not only has he probably lost his job, may end up being criminally prosecuted for all that water that was wasted, but his smartphone is waterlogged and unusable. And all because he was taking a selfie by the reservoir. I think in some ways that is another example of the wrong approach to work, because ultimately all our work, wherever you are working this morning, if you're on your way to work, what is our work? Yes, it's about earning money because we need money. We need money to live. We don't want to end up in universal basic income or whatever it's called. We need money to work. And we want to contribute to society because we want to, guess what? We want to serve society. We want to serve society. Whatever is our work, it's a way of serving society. And you might say, well, I do X and I just earn a lot of money. Well, you still pay taxes on it. That's a way of serving society. You may employ people. That's a way of serving society. You may be working in a field which is much more obviously service, be it in the military or as a police officer or working in the medical professions or as a social worker. Whatever it is you're doing, you're trying to help people. You're trying to build society up. And that's because work is about contributing to the society we live in, not simply getting for doing nothing, which is that universal basic income. But it's also not doing the bare minimum so that we can spend more time gaming. But it's also not abusing our position, which this man, I'm afraid, probably did and wasted a lot of water in between. Listen, wherever you're going, whatever you're doing today, it's Monday morning. Let's be cheerful. Let's be cheerful that you've got work to go to. If you've ever been unemployed, and I have, it's a funny world. Everybody else is busy except you. So rejoice in the work you have. Rejoice in the boss you have, however difficult it may be, because it's teaching you something as well as paying the bills. Okay, now listen, that's enough about work today. We'll talk about other things through the week. It's very good to be back with you. If you've any comments in any of this, feel free to contact the show on 888-928-0881. Now, when we come back, we're doing one of our simulcasts with the Crusade Channel with the talk radio legend Mike Church, and he's going to be taking us through all the runners and riders in the presidential election that's about to hit the United States, both Republican and Democrat. Mike will be joining us after these words. So, stay tuned to the Charlie Frequency. Welcome back to the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. It is very good to be back with you once more here on Archangel Radio. I've missed you all. I don't know if you missed me, but I certainly missed you. And it gives me an opportunity to catch up old friends on air. And
I want you to do the math on this.
One of them is Mike
so
Church.
So the federal government squanders about what, $5 trillion a year? That's a lot of squandering.
That was Mike Church, who we are about to link up with, I think. Let's see if we can get a message to Mike to say, Mike, we're moving on. So Mike Church has been on the show before and will be familiar to you all. He is the host of the Mike Church Show, which is heard over on the Crusade Channel, which is part of the Verias Radio Network. And Mike broadcasts that show each day, each weekday for about 4 hours a day. I know, it's incredible. 4 hours a day, and has done so for about 30 years. And it's a political talk show. He does a lot of politics on it. He does other things too, but it's mainly about politics. So I thought it'd be really interesting to have Mike's take on the current presidential race, which is just beginning to warm up, right? Some of the people are entering on the Republican side because they don't have an incumbent. And there's a few people on the Democrat side that are throwing their hats in the ring and saying, yes, we need an alternative to the current incumbent of the White House, Joe Biden. So whenever we get Mike, that's what we're going to be talking about today with Mike here on the show. So if you've got a question for Mike or you've got views on this, these are contentious views. Obviously, Archangel Radio has no view on this. We are a non-profit. We don't endorse any candidates whatsoever, but we can still talk about these things and we can have people come on and give their two penneth worth, as we say, on the different runners and riders. But obviously, Archangel Radio is endorsing no one other than our Lord and Savior. That's who we endorse every single day on this show, on this network, 24/7. 365 days per year. But if you've got a question for Mike Church, you can call us on 888-928-0881, or you can text us on 251-928-2111, and I'd be very happy to field your questions to Mike. So, Mike, I don't know if he's... Let's ask, Reed, is Mike ready to roll, do you think?
I believe that he's doing his show right now, Kevin, so we can link up real quick, okay. And we'll see if
okay.
you guys
let's,
can get linked
let's,
up.
Let's try and break into his show. Mike yep. is a man of many, many words.
All right. While we're waiting.
Yep. While we're waiting, I shall go on to talk to you about another rather comic story about the workplace. Do you remember we were talking about that Indian reservoir official who drained the whole reservoir to try and find his mobile phone? Well, there was a German surgeon who recently decided to get the local cleaner to help him with an operation. Yeah, I kid you not. This is a story I could hardly believe when I came across it. Wait a minute. I'm getting a message here from Mike. Mike, are you there?
I have been here.
Oh, well, we've been waiting for you. So it's one of those classic things before mobile phones where we were standing either side of the counter waiting for each other. How are you doing?
I'm wonderful. I hosted an entire segment while you had me on mute. I introduced you to the audience, talked old times. We went around and we talked with Paul McAree. We went to Ireland and all of it was for naught.
Oh, dear. Well, listen, let me introduce you to anybody who may not know who you are, Mike. And I like doing these introductions because Mike needs no introduction, because for 3 decades he's been taking to the airwaves to harangue, castigate and ultimately eviscerate those who deal in lies, deception or corruption of any kind, whether they be in the White House, the Congress or the nation's corporate boardrooms. He is, in short, a media personality that has more in common with an Old Testament prophet than even he realizes. Today, he is the host of the long-running Mike Church Show on the Crusade Channel, and he joins us here on Archangel Radio via a simulcast. Mike Church, welcome to the Turley Frequency.
Well, see, now you've completely destroyed any hope that I had for a comeback in this vocation here. Calling me an Old Testament prophet. What happens to all the prophets? They all get told no. They all get, hey, they get cast outside the city walls, KV. Yeah.
Well, you've already been cast out, according to some of your various stories that you've told me. Now, listen, Mike, before we get carried away, I brought you on today because I in particular, but I'm sure our audience right across Lower Alabama, are very, very interested in your take on the beginnings, and it is the beginnings, of the presidential race of 2024. And if it's okay with you and with your Crusader audience, and good morning to all you Crusaders, I'd like to just, almost like we're the Kentucky Derby, and I'm going to take you through the runners and riders, and I want the Mike Church form guide. How does that sound?
That sounds wonderful. I am ready to answer.
Okay. In which case, your choice. Would you rather go with the Democrats or with the Republicans?
Let's start with the Democrats. Democrats. Yes. Let's do Democrats first.
Well, it probably won't take us that long. now, it seems to be looking. There are three contenders, all of whom you will know. But answer me this, Mike, as a non-American, as an ordinary European, is it true that you have to be over 69 to run for the presidency these days?
It's not true. That is not true. You only have to be 35 years of age.
35. Well, 35. They've certainly added a few years on. So let's start with somebody who I had never heard of called Marion Williamson. Tell me about her.
She is a complete and total nutcase. Marianne Williamson is a quack. Look, she's one of these people that runs for the presidency. I want to say Marianne Williamson ran against Obama back in 2012. She runs for the presidency so that she can try and work her way onto a debate or onto a television show where the candidates are, or a town hall or whatever, so she can promote her little special pet cause and whatever website it is that she's hawking these days. Complete non-contender, non-starter. She's a nutcase. I'm gonna stick with nutcase. You look female whack job up in the phone book, and there's a picture of Marianne Williamson.
Has she run before for high office?
Yes. Oh yes, she ran for president.
And totally failed.
Yeah. Oh yes. Yes. I want to say she ran twice. I'm not an expert on Marianne Williamson, but I want to say that she ran in 2012 and in 2016. Might have even run in 2020, although I don't know. She didn't run in 2020 because the regime leaders did not have any opposition. So, yes, to my recollection, Kevin, is that she has run at least twice. But we're checking that fact just to make sure. But she has run before. Yes.
Well, just as an aside, Mike, give me something of the psychology of the serial runner who knows that they haven't got a chance. What? Why do they do it? Why do they put themselves through this?
Pride, vanity.
Right.
Pride and vanity. What drives most illicit acts? Pride. But as I said, she just wants to. She wants to be on a roundtable show. She hopes that there's going to be a debate. But the sad truth is, or the reality is there probably isn't going to be one. And if there is, no one in the Democrat Party wants to risk a Joseph Robinette Biden being put on the spot and having to answer questions when he hasn't gotten his go juice. So,
right.
I don't know how well this is going to work out for Marianne.
So, Marianne, from what you're saying to me, somebody who I knew nothing about, it sounds like she can't get on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here or some such reality TV show. So she decides to run for the U.S. president.
Yeah, she was never on an episode of Donald Trump's The Apprentice. He'd have fired her in the interview room.
And if she had, she would have probably had a whole different lifestyle trajectory. Okay, so I think we can probably say that her chances of being elected or even contending, really, are below zero.
They're somewhere in the neighborhood of
0.0.
I love it. I love it. Okay, well, somebody who has made the news over this side, probably because of his last name, is obviously Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Kennedy name, the Kennedy brand still has a certain magic, whatever we might think of the Kennedys and some of the things they've done. But the name still has a certain, or does it? I mean, does it still have a certain charisma in the United States?
Yes. Yes, it does. What's your question about RFK Jr.?
What are his chances?
Good. Better than many people may think. Number one, he is a Kennedy. Number two, Joseph Robinette Biden, 54% of Democrats surveyed by the – who was the survey, Maggie? We just did it on Friday. It wasn't Gallup. It was – it'll come to me in a moment here. 54% of Democrats think he is unfit for the office because of his age. It goes up to 67% when you add in Republicans and independents. There's a lot of downside to President or regime leader Biden, as I call him. RFK Jr. is a good campaigner. I believe that he's a patriot. Someone like me can say good things about RFK Jr., and I do. I think that someone at the Democrat National Circus might have made a phone call to RFK Jr. and said, your country needs you like it needed your uncle and like it needed your father. We need you to step up and run for president. You know, it's very noteworthy, Kevin. He did not announce as an independent. He announced as a Democrat. That is significant. Mm-hmm. Okay, because he wants to use the party apparatus. And here's the question. Is the party going to tell him no? Is the Democrat National Circus, which probably disagrees with RFK Jr. on most things. I mean, the only card in their arsenal that he actually brings to the table and will play with them is the climate change card. And I don't even, I'm not even so sure that he's sold on some of the climate change remedies that they have, you know, Green New Deals and what have you, that they have cooked up. But to me, RFK Jr., if you hear him campaign, you'll nod your head in agreement. And you'll say, yeah, I agree with that guy. Again, I think he's a patriot. I think he's a good man. He is a Kennedy. He's one of us. He's a Catholic. I'm not saying he's the world's best Catholic. I actually think that that the Democrat Party is at a crossroads here, a serious one. Are they going to stick with the cult of death, which is what Biden represents? RFK Jr. does not represent the cult of death. This really could be a showdown here inside the Democrat Party, and I sincerely mean that. All Southern Democrats are not of the evil cloth that the Bidens are cut out of. They just aren't.
Mm. That's very interesting. I mean, already, Mike, you must be aware, though, that there is a concerted campaign to paint RFK Jr. in a particular light.
Mm. Of course.
I'm talking about the words COVID denial are just thrown around like confetti, sure. Confetti at a fifth marriage.
And he would tick that box proudly, and he would say that, well, what does the science actually say? The thing about RFK Jr. is this man is no intellectual lightweight.
Not at all.
He's very, very big. He's a brilliant man. He's a brilliant guy. He's very courageous. You know, he's been out against he's not an anti-vaxxer. They were also going to call him bad. He's against forced vaccinations. He's written several books. He's an accomplished author, an accomplished entrepreneur. He's an anti-Democrat, for heaven's sake, which is why I think someone in the Democrat Party said, you need to come in and save your party and save your country. Your country needs you. Kevin, I sincerely believe that he is answering a call. I really do.
There, I mean, is it my imagination, Mike, or is there some similarities with Lyndon Johnson, Robert Kennedy Sr. type scenario of 68?
You know your American history very well. Note, though, that LBJ got trounced, destroyed by Richard Nixon in 1968. But to the point where almost, you know, the party was basically telling him, dude, don't even run. The Democrat Party was in such a state of squalor and disarray. I mean, the next candidate that they fielded got beaten by Nixon again in 1972, George McGovern, the biggest lopsided landslide in American history. Is the Democrat Party at another similar crossroads? I think that your analogy is pretty good.
Excellent. Mike, we're going to have to pause it there before we leave Biden for the moment. Talking of lightweights, sorry, heavyweights, we leave the President Biden there for the moment. We're going to go and take a break. And if we may, if you can hang around, I'd like to get your take on all the Republican contenders and any independents that are hanging around out there. Are you okay to hang around for a bit longer, Mike?
I most certainly am. We'll see you on the other side.
Looking forward to it. Okay, folks, we will be back after okay, these
so,
words.
Folks,
stay
there,
tuned
you heard
to
it.
The Turley Frequency.
Some of you may. You know.
The Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. This morning we are joined by talk radio legend Mike Church, and we are doing a simulcast with the Crusade Channel over on the Veritas Radio Network. And Mike's been taking us through some of the Democratic contenders. There aren't an awful lot of them. Mike, are you ready to unmute and join us again for the Republicans and anybody else we can round up? Mike, you're going to have to unmute if you're going to join us.
Yes. Yes, I am standing by. I didn't know that the thing, I didn't hit that mute button. Somebody else did that.
No, I did, because you were broadcasting across Lower Alabama, across our advertising. But that's another story. Listen, it's good to have you back, Mike. And good morning to all your crusaders out there. Some of them I know, and they're a great audience, very loyal audience. And it's good to be very much joining you this morning. Can we park Biden for a moment rather than talking about his chances? We'll talk about him and the other major contender. But I want to take your view, really, Mike, on some of the Republican contenders who seem to be growing faster than weeds in my garden at the moment. People I've never heard of, but I'm sure you've got a view on. Let's just run through them. We've got Tim Scott, U.S. Senator from South Carolina.
Tim Scott is it's a weird thing in the state of South Carolina. The two senators, United States senators, are both 50-something year old. Well, Tim Scott's in his 40s. So Lindsey Graham and Tim Scott are both very aged single males that have no children. That's it's just strange. I actually know Tim Scott. I interviewed Tim Scott on the SiriusXM Patriot Channel when he was running to become a state senator from South Carolina. He was a contemporary and a friend of my old friend Ron Paul. He is, I would say, he is a boilerplate conservative guy, no risk conservative, one of those guys that I guess he's a member of Conservatism Inc. I like Tim Scott. I don't think he has any chance whatsoever. I believe that Tim Scott is running so that he can make a deal with the ultimate nominee, who's going to be Trump, for a cabinet position. Maybe he doesn't want to be a United States senator anymore. So, but he's a good guy. He's a good man. He's very pro-life, really, really pro-life. But I don't think he has any chance whatsoever. I think he is there again for a cabinet post.
Okay. What about Vivek Ramaswamy, who is the executive chairman of Strive Asset Management and has had a little bit of buzz over this side for various reasons? He's come out of nowhere, right?
He kind of has, although I believe he had some sort of a position in the Trump administration in the early year, or in 2018 with the Trump administration. Vivek is likable. He is a just brilliant guy. I mean, he's one of those jet fuel geniuses that could just talk about anything, but he kind of like reminds me of my governor, former governor of Louisiana, Bobby Jindal, who ran and got beaten very badly in the primaries by Donald Trump in 2016. He's whip smart. I agree with most of what he says policy wise. Although I think he just made an unforced error yesterday when he was asked by who was it that was asking him about whether or not he would ban transgenders in the military, and he said, no, my policies are directed at children, but I would have no ban on transgenders in the military. And look, regardless of the social moral doctrine position on that, that's not smart. Mm-hmm. Someone that is sexually compromised like that is a security risk in an army. You don't want you need to minimize all risks. If you have an army that's actually there for fighting, you need to minimize all risk like that. So that to me is an unforced error. I think Vivek makes it to the final Final Four. Mm-hmm. To put it in basketball terms,
could he be vice president material?
Possibly. I think that it's far more likely that Vivek Ramaswamy would be vice president than the next guy you're going to ask me about.
What, is a Hutchinson?
No. Okay. He's far more likely to be VP material than I think that Ron DeSantis is.
Well, let's just leave DeSantis for a moment, because DeSantis I know a little bit about, and I'm really interested on your views on him, Mike. But I just want to take you through some people who may just be we're not sure why they're running, really. I mean, Asa Hutchinson, 72-year-old governor of Arkansas. What's in it for him?
Former governor of Arkansas, who is now being shown how to actually be a governor of Arkansas by Sarah Huckabee Sanders. He is an old former Southern Democrat, who yellow dog Democrat, as they used to call them, who is now a Republican. His COVID record is awful, 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 awful. I have no idea what inspired this man to run for the presidency, other than he's a lifelong politician who doesn't want to go back into honest work.
Well, they have that in common with talk show hosts, right?
This is true. This is true. We skate on the same rink.
Absolutely. Now, well, we'll leave him aside. He doesn't sound like a contender at all. What about Nikki Haley, 51-year-old former ambassador to the United States, woman? What is she doing in this race?
Well, she was Trump's Secretary of State for a while, so she knows how he plays the game. She endorsed Trump in 2016. This puts her in a very, politically sensitive position. There are people that think that Nikki Haley has a really good chance. Say she's a good debater. She's very smart. She's that and the other. She was a disaster, in my opinion, when she was governor of South Carolina. She is one of these, quote, conservatives, close quotes, that has never seen a deal that they don't want to make. There's another thing about Nikki Haley. This is not going to come up, but it will come up on my show, and I'll tell your audience this. She is not eligible to be president of the United States. Her parents were not naturalized citizens when she was born. She's got a problem here. She has the same problem that Kamala Harris has, and that Ted Cruz, should he decide again, and Marco Rubio. And it's this warped telling of what a natural born citizen is. But having said all that, she'll add some spice to the debates. So she checks the box. We got a woman in here now, and she's in the final four. She's in my final four.
Okay.
So
okay.
Comes down to four candidates on a stage that are going to debate and duke it out. She's in my final four.
Now, what about talking of the crossover between talk shows and politics? So we have Larry Elder popping up, who is a talk show host and also involved in politics. He's 71. What are his chances?
None. 0.0. He got trounced by Gruesome Newsom. By, as I've heard him called, Gavin Newsolini in California in the recall election. Larry Elder is just another one of those guys that is going to run for president so he can raise some funds and some awareness for his radio show and for his advertising clients. He has absolutely no shot of winning anything. None.
Okay. Well, that's really helpful, Mike, because we've kind of cleared the floor now of all the runners and the riders that are not really serious contenders, which leaves us with three. One of whom may be the next president of the United States. And let's start with the one who hasn't been the president of the United States, which is Ron DeSantis. A lot of talk about Ron DeSantis this side of the Atlantic. A lot of people saying that Trump should step aside and let a younger man through. DeSantis is 44. What's your take on him?
Well, as governor of Florida, we like him. We love him as governor of Florida. as candidate for the presidency in 2024. I think this is a political blunder. I believe that he has no. Let's just cut to the finale. We can, and then we'll fill in the gaps. No one is going to take this nomination from Donald Trump. It's just not going to happen, and it's not going to be DeSantis. DeSantis is basically practicing here for 2028, but he may be ruining his chances here because the people of Florida elected him as their governor. And he kind of lied to them, or he misled them and told them that he wanted to be their governor and he was in for all 4 years. Well, obviously that's not the case. And believe me, Donald Trump will be reminding everyone in Florida of this as this goes along. This is very interesting, though, because you're going to go from the Iowa caucus to the New Hampshire primary, and then you're going to go to the South Carolina primary if they had the 2016 order. And somewhere shortly after that, you're going to have a primary in Florida. Mm-hmm. I will wager anyone that wants to lose their money that Donald Trump will carry Florida. He will win the Republican primary in Florida, and that will be the end of DeSantis's campaign.
Right, right. Now, you said that nobody can take this away from Donald Trump. Let's just look at Trump for a moment.
Okay.
I mean, the only person who might take it away from Donald Trump is Donald Trump.
This is true. This is true.
I've never known a man in court as much other than a lawyer.
Well, I don't think any of these little petty fogging, petty charges are going to stop him from being on the ballot. They may try and pull something like trying to maybe the long play of getting of convicting him in New York of whatever this supposed crime is that they can pass some arcane law or they can pass some law in their legislature and say that, you know, someone who's convicted of felony in New York can't run for the presidency. I think Trump would sue and the case would go to the Supreme Court and he ultimately would win. You know, there are two convicted felons that have run for the presidency, one of them from a jail cell, William Jennings Bryan. And who's the guy? 19. It'll come to me in a moment here. Eugene Debs. Eugene Debs was convicted of violating the Espionage Act of 1917. He was a war protester, the Great War, as you call it in England. Debs was a war protester. He was also a member of the early what was called the American Socialist Party, and he ran for the presidency against Woodrow Wilson from jail. So he
lost.
He did lose. Surprisingly, he did lose.
But one of the political cognoscenti this side of the Atlantic are saying that the Democrats are really wanting Trump to run again because they think that Biden will beat him again. What's your take on that? Is this some kind of ruse on the part of the Democrats that they're going hard on DeSantis so that Trump comes out the winner and therefore they ultimately gain the White House once more?
Well, if that's what they're saying, they need to actually apply some logic here. Because the entire apparatus of the Democrat Party, including the Fifth Estate, state-run media, has been trying now unsuccessfully since July of 2015 to wipe Donald Trump from the face of the earth. And they have not succeeded in it. 8 years and running now. So, no, I do not believe that. If all the votes actually are counted and there's an election that is held in November of 2024 and it is Trump and Biden, Trump will trounce Biden in that particular race. And he will do something that's only been done once before in U.S. history, and it was done by the great President Grover Cleveland. Was separated by one term, and Cleveland famously, as revenge against the Congress that conspired against him to get him kicked out of the presidency that he would lose, when he returned, Grover Cleveland vetoed 455 bills in 4 years that he was then president. So does Trump beat Biden? Yes, I believe that he does. And no, okay. I do not believe that the Democrat Party wants Trump on that ballot.
Well, we have you now on record, Mike. This is now taped. Your prediction, we will be playing it back to you every single week in the election cycle. But just final question, Mike, before we close. Let's say something happens to Trump, something happens to Biden. Is there a kind of left field contender, somebody maybe hasn't put their hat in the ring yet, a Chris Christie, a Mike Pence, somebody who might come in and winner takes all?
Were something to happen to Trump and were something to happen to Biden, then I think you would see a DeSantis, RFK Jr. It'd be Kennedy versus Kennedy back on the ballot again. No doubt about that. And I think DeSantis would probably best the rest of the field. So that would be sans Biden and Trump, then, yeah, DeSantis, Kennedy.
Excellent. Mike, we've run out of time, unfortunately. It's been an absolute pleasure. Just tell people, though, very, very quickly about your latest drive this June. What's this campaign you're running?
Well, we Catholics should be in opposition to this thing called Pride Month. We should have been in opposition to it from the get-go, and we weren't. So I call on all men, leaders of families, leaders of your businesses, of your parishes, of your communities, celebrate Humility Month. What's the opposite of pride? Humility. And you can go to our website, humilityofheart.com.
Excellent. Mike, there's the music. Listen, crusadechannel.com. Find out more about Mike Church and all his wondrous commentary. Mike, thank you so much for being on the show today.
You're welcome. Talk soon. God bless you. All right.
Okay. So,